The story of Daniel is, among other things, a lesson in where to draw your line in the sand. In other words, it's about deciding in what ways in life you are willing to compromise, and on the other hand, over what matters you are going to make a stand and say this far and no further. In other words, it's about working out what is trivial and what is important, what really doesn't matter at all, and what is worth standing up for. That about which we should learn to live and let live, and that about which we should be ready to die. A question of judgment, in other words, requiring wisdom and discernment, which Daniel and his friends seem to have in abundance. It matters in your personal life, say in the workplace, when there will be ethical issues that arise from time to time, about which you as a Christian will need to decide, can I knowingly take part in this activity, or do I have to say no? It matters in your family life, particularly those of you concerned with the raising of children, having to decide at times, look, what doesn't really matter, and where do we need to say that this is a line in the sand that you won't cross? I'm so grateful, as I think back on my own upbringing, that my parents seemed to more or less get that right. They didn't object, for example, when, as a kind of rebellious teenager, I was going out with hair sprayed green and dressed in the kinds of clothes that must have really had them questioning what their son was coming to. And yet, I think they kind of knew that that was all superficial stuff, which didn't really matter. What was more important was where I was going with my life, and I think they saw that that was kind of on track. So they let me off with all kinds of stuff, realizing that these weren't points at which battles were to be fought. And this business of knowing when it's okay and when we should say no matters very much in church life. The sad truth is that Christians, churches, haven't always been very good at knowing when to stand and when to go. One thinks, for example, of the so-called Bible Belt of America, the Deep South, when during the 50s and so on, the churches were saying, thou shalt not go to the cinema, and thou shalt have nothing to do with this rock and roll, because Mr. Presley is gyrating his hips a little too feverishly. And they made that a line in the sand, while all the time entrenching the racism that had come from the slavery of these states. What an abomination, and what a terrible judgment call to make one thing a matter of life and death and to let the other one go. It's tragic when we get it so wrong, deciding what matters and to stand up to and what actually is of no consequence. Or another example, I remember, again, back in my own teenage days, there seemed to be a great battle in my church about one thing in particular, and it was this. Should we be allowed to guess the number of sweeties in a jar? Now, there were those who said, it's gambling, of course, and again, thou shalt have nothing to do with it. Do you know, at the same time, there was a great debate within the Church of Scotland concerning the resurrection of Jesus Christ and whether actually we had to believe in it or not. And as I recall, nobody in my church batted an eyelid about that. But for goodness sake, we can't have guessing the sweeties in the jar. Why, oh why, do we so misjudge what matters and really what doesn't? Time will tell. History will tell whether or not folks are right. Those who are at this time leaving the Church of Scotland over the question of actively homosexual clergy. Some have said that this is a line in the sand and we are not stepping over it. And have left, or some others will leave the church because of it. Others will not. Time will tell. Daniel and his friends were wise. Wise in knowing when to say no and when to go with the flow. As we heard Stuart's reading and as he led into it, they were among the Jews who had been taken into exile in Babylon, away from Jerusalem, away from their homeland. They were living as foreigners in a strange land. Now, the aim of their captors, the aim of the Babylonians whom they were now living under, was to assimilate the Jews, to have them merge in, to have them become just like Babylonians in every way. It would be a wee bit like this if we said, for example, to those coming from the Indian subcontinent to Scotland, if we were to say to them, well, you can come here, but you can no longer wear the clothes of your culture, and you must stop talking Urdu. You must become like us in every way. You've got to become British, and that means leaving behind all of your own culture. It was a wee bit like that for Daniel and his friends being taken to Babylon. Babylonians wanted them to forget everything that they had known and to become just like them, just like the Babylonians. That's the situation Daniel and his friends were faced with. And I want to say to you, is what we all are faced with every day in secular Scotland, 2013. Living as a Christian in a nation which has moved so far from Christian roots challenges us every day to work out how we should live and where there are lines in the sand that must be drawn and beyond which we will not go. And how Daniel and his friends handled that situation is, for me, highly instructive. Sometimes they were more than happy to compromise. Sometimes they realized that things weren't worth fighting about. Take, for example, the business of their names. When they arrived in Babylon, they were given Babylonian names. But I guess deep down they realized that didn't really matter one way or the other. And so they didn't make a fuss about it. And as we can glean from just this little phrase, they were made to wear Babylonian clothing. But again, they must have guessed to themselves, well, it doesn't really matter. This isn't a line in the sand. This isn't of any great importance, so let's not make a fuss about it. On these matters, we don't hear them saying, "We will not do it." They judge them to be unimportant. This is what we've got to be good at. Not fighting battles that don't count. Not getting het up about that which really doesn't matter. On the other hand, knowing and understanding that some things do matter, and saying, "Upon this I am making my stand." And so we find Daniel and his friends that there were times when they said no. The question of eating food, drinking the wine of the Babylonian court. We hear that Daniel said, "No, I'm not going to do that." Now, it might seem somewhat strange to us. We think to ourselves, well, what would it matter about the food that they were eating? But for them, it was critical. For them, it was a line in the sand, and they made a stand on it. Or the other issue of prayer. An edict was read out. A law was set down. You shall not pray to any other gods or any other man than to King Nebuchadnezzar. Now, here was something that these devout Jews simply could not go along with, even though it was upon the threat of their deaths. For them, this was a non-negotiable of the utmost importance. I want to say to you that as we are living our lives, we need to find where these lines are. Because at some point or other, we are going to come up against situations that will call for us to say, "I can't do that. I won't do that." And to have the courage to stand accordingly, as Daniel and his friends did. And then, of course, the example we read this morning, Stuart read for us. They refused to take part in idolatry and to bow down and to worship other gods than their own. This gold statue that King Nebuchadnezzar erected for his own glory on the plains of Babylon. Now, of course, the Jews were never going to do this. In their commandments, it was made clear to them. So absolutely, this was a line in the sand. And so their refusal to obey, their refusal to bow down to this statue came to the notice of the authorities, and they were summoned and charged and warned. "You shall bow down," and threatened with the fiery furnace. Folks, I guess for us, this all seems very remote. Talk of kings and gold statues and fiery furnaces and the like. I guess it's very easy to conclude with stories like this. This has nothing to do with me. Nothing to do with my life. Well, I beg to differ, but before we come back to our own situation, let me just share with you that, yes, for some Christians in our world today, this is a very real matter. North Korea. You see, when I saw this picture, it really chilled me. Because it really is an echo of exactly what Daniel and his friends were being asked to do. To bow down before the gold statue of the leader. You think it's an ancient Bible story? This is happening in our world today, where the North Korean leader demands absolute commitment and devotion. And yes, even that people will bow down to his image. Now Christians, on account of their faith and their refusal to put him first, suffer terribly as a consequence. North Korea is the number one country in the world for persecution against Christians. And yet some are prepared to die because of it. I'm going to pause and let you read that. In our world, today, there are Christians giving up their lives for what they believe. So don't be fooled into thinking this has nothing to do with us and this is ancient history. And further to that, this Thursday morning coming, always once a month, we gather here to pray for Christians who are being persecuted because of their faith. If you are free on a Thursday morning, the notice is in the bulletin. Come here and stand with those Christians in prayer and support for them. I guess my other question to you is this. What does your faith in Jesus mean to you? You see, for these people in North Korea right now, it means everything. It means everything to them. What does your faith in Jesus mean to you? Where would you draw the line? And upon what matters will you say that my faith in Jesus Christ will not allow me, but will instead lead me to do this? Daniel and his friends are to me an inspiration. Because of their wisdom in knowing what mattered and what really didn't, and because of their courage and commitment to stand up for what they believed, and their response to the king over this whole question of bowing down for me is just about the most inspiring verse in the whole of the Bible. Their refusal to do what they believe to be wrong, even willing to give up their lives on account of it. Their refusal to conform, to go along with, to assimilate, to become like everybody else. And isn't this the great judgment on the church of this day and age? That there's not enough to distinguish us from everybody else. That so often we just become like everybody else. And we have the values of the society rather than the values that Christ gives us. If so, then let us repent. And let us be instead inspired all the more by Daniel and his friends. Because their example, this is what is asked of Christians today. I know there are no gold statues erected in our land. But there are daily questions of what matters. Times in our lives when we will be asked to consider and we'll need to refuse to put anything before God. Do you know, it's the terms of their refusal that most inspire me. Their faith in God, of course. They say to the king, God is able to deliver us. But it's the next bit I love most. And it sends a tingle down my spine every time I read it. And I'm so infused and encouraged by it to stand up and to live out my faith. They say to the king, our God is able to save us. But even if he doesn't, we will not bow down to your gods. Even if God is not there for us in that moment, we will not. Theirs was a faith, in other words, that was not dependent on results. Even if God doesn't save us, this is where we stand, and we're not for moving. For too many of us, our faith is along these lines. I'll believe if it all works out nicely. I'll believe if it helps me in my life. Or I'll believe if I feel better as a result. I'll believe if I get healed of my illnesses. If. What Daniel and his friends were making clear was this: there is no if in faith. No ifs, no buts, no provisos, no conditions. This we believe, and this is where we stand, regardless. We worship him, we believe in him, we follow him. Full stop. End of sentence. It's beautifully expressed too in this verse from the prophet Habakkuk. Though the fig tree does not bud and there are no grapes on the vine, though the olive crop fails and the fields produce no food, though there are no sheep in the pen and no cattle in the stalls, yet I will rejoice in the Lord. Our faith does not depend on results or outcomes. Daniel and his friend said, we will not. And the final word today must be about Daniel once more. Those who were out to get him, those who would accuse him, those who tried to dig the dirt on Daniel, those who tried to find things about which he could be charged, in the end had to conclude this about him: we will never find anything against this man. In other words, Daniel lived a life that was above reproach. Now I know that is hugely challenging. But I want every single one of you to go out from church today and on with the rest of your lives, daring to be a Daniel. And committing to live your life in such a way that they will never find anything against you. Dare to be a Daniel. Let's pray.